Welcome to the Slow Living Podcast. If you are ready to ditch hustle culture for good while continuing to meet your personal and professional goals, you are in the right place. I'm your host, Stephanie O'Day, and I work with overachievers from all over the world who are ready to stop living life in triage mode and start living the life of their dreams, one filled with abundance, joy, and a sense of purpose. Life is meant to be enjoyed, not endured. Let's get started. Hi there, Slow Down Society. So if you're a fan of the podcast, you're going to absolutely love the book. Slow Living, Cultivating a Life of Purpose in a Hustle-Driven World is now available wherever books are sold. Buy it for yourself, your children, your friends, and your neighbors. You can get all the juicy details at stephanieoday.com/slowlivingbook. Trust me, this is hands down the best $20 you'll ever spend. Hi there, Slow Down Society. Steph here, and we are on episode 219 of the Slow Living Podcast. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening and for just taking the time for yourself and continuing to tune in. This is episode 219, and this is the first part of the fifth coaching session with Melissa. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing your thoughts and for reaching out. I love knowing that there are real people out there from all over the world. I'm going to call this episode Coming to Terms with Your Origin Story. A big part of slow living is acknowledging where you are and being okay with it, and then deciding on purpose how to get from where you are to wherever it is you want to go. And so we do that in many different ways. I know that I repeat myself quite often through these coaching calls and then also through all of the previous episodes, but it really is coming to terms. And so Melissa is actually writing her story. And because of that, she really has to unravel a lot of things. She's got some darkness in her family that she's shining light on, and she wants to write about that. She shares these stories with her own children, and then she talks about coming to terms with them in her own life. And that's something that I really want you to do also. Nothing gets fixed if it's always in the shadows, and I want you to shine a light. And maybe at times you had to box up some emotions and some thoughts and some feelings and some things that have happened to you and boxed them up and just put them on a shelf and didn't want to worry about them. Well, today's the day. Today's the day we're going to poke at them a little bit, because all of those things that happened in your past, that's what got you to where you are right now. And in order to get to wherever it is you want to go, you really do have to come to terms with that. Melissa has been in the Simple Shortcuts to Peace course for quite a few years. And so every year I have my coaching clients do these taking stock worksheets. Usually we do them in the days between Christmas and New Year's, and kind of that like dead week. And I have them for you. So if you are interested in these worksheets, I call them two things. I call them the year in the review worksheets, or I call them the taking stock of the here and now worksheets. But you can download them at stephanieoday.com/new you. And this is the exact same packet that I have done for, I don't know, a good 10, 12 years, and what my coaching clients do every year. And regardless of when I start working with them, I have them fill this out, because you have to know where you are in order to get to the next step. Okay, here is Melissa. Hi, Melissa. How are you?
I am good. Good morning.
Good morning. Okay. I can see behind you, since last time we talked, it looks like we're in a different room and you have a full-fledged arcade set up behind you.
We are a little stuck in the 80s.
I love it.
We actually met at an arcade, which is very, very 80s of us in terms of a meet cute. And anyway, we have a few. They're not the original. They were sold in 2020, 2021, but we have several standing arcade games. And one of the purposes in the new house was to incorporate that into the living room. And so we did.
How fun. Okay. What are the stand-up games that you, first off, do you have like a top fave whenever you see it in the wild, you're getting all excited to go play?
Yes. Ms. Pac-Man. And that was my birthday gift in 2020. And then we added from there. So we have that one, which was the one I wanted. We have Dragon's Lair, and then we have Frogger, and we have Mortal Kombat, which was the one Dave wanted.
Mortal Kombat. I loved Mortal Kombat when you would have that guy's, I don't know, get over here. And he would like grab their spine and pull. Oh, it was horrible, but I loved it.
Fun fact, that is what he was playing when my girlfriends and I spotted him in the arcade. So
that
we
is awesome.
And
all right
they have
it's
other-
it's Melissa and Dave's origin story.
It is, but
very cool.
They have other games that you can scroll to, but I typically just play those four.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, congratulations. We haven't talked in a few weeks because I was traveling, but I was going through your call notes and different things. And is the status of the old house that it's empty and ready to sell?
Close to it. The push last weekend was we rented a dumpster for the weekend. And so everything that we usually do during a weekend got pushed to the side, and Dave and I and all five kids went over there and addressed the junk and did what we needed to do to make sure everything that needed to go in the dumpster before they took the dumpster away was done. And it wasn't fun, but it was kind of neat to do it with the five kids that I raised in that house.
Yeah.
And we came across a lot of old family pictures. I had no idea that I owned family memorabilia, because I got boxes when my grandmother passed away that I thought I had gone through pretty thoroughly, but I had not.
Yeah. And so am I reading it right that you had all your kids home and then you also had a 16-year-old birthday party?
Yes. Yes. My youngest turned 16 the day before yesterday. And we happened to have that day off of work. So I think today is Tuesday and it's not, it's Wednesday.
But
she is 16 now.
And you invited everyone to the new house, and that was sort of how you announced that you moved?
Yes, we did. I mean, my sisters knew, but we were just being very quiet about it. And I texted, we have a family group chat. We try to do Sunday dinners with the extended family at least once a month. And so I said, okay, Alexis's birthday party is, you know, here. And anyway, come to this address.
That's
my
awesome.
Mom and dad walked in and I'm like, so we're selling the other house. And guess what? We live here now.
Okay. So how did that go over?
Really well, actually. They just kind of looked around and said, okay. And I had no idea how that was going to go. So it
what
went.
What made you want to keep it a secret?
I've mentioned this before in other calls, and maybe it's not limited to Generation X. Maybe it's just a me thing, although I feel like a lot of my friends my age experience it. There's a part of me that still very much feels like I have to get my parents' permission to make big life decisions. And I knew this was right. Dave knew this was right. Our family knew this was right. But I couldn't guarantee Mom and Dad were going to think this was right. And I just wanted to be able to embrace making this decision and making this change without negative feedback.
What do you feel? So the word that pops in my brain is justified because it worked. That said, like leading into this weekend, did you still feel like little kid worry and anxiety that you're going to make a mistake?
A little bit, not as much, because we were so very overwhelmed by getting everything into that dumpster that I didn't have time to think about it. But once we got everything in there and it's Sunday afternoon and we're getting set up for the party and we're getting set up for the dinner, then I was like, oh my goodness, I haven't thought about this. I have no idea how they're going to react to this.
Okay.
And they reacted pretty well. In particular, my dad, this makes sense, you know, and pointed out all the things about the house and the yard that made sense to him. And And that is one of the things my dad does that I love. So it was good.
That's great. Okay, so he validated your decision and gave you gold stars and made you feel like he was proud of you by making this decision. Yeah. I don't know if it's a Gen X thing. I think we're just sort of programmed and hotwired to really, really want our parents' approval. And some parents willingly give it, and others it's like pulling teeth. Yeah, that's interesting that you brought that up. I'll have to think about that a little more, but I'm really thrilled that it worked out for you. Yeah, you talk about how your sisters were there and then the different family dynamics between you and your sisters, and then watching your own kids in action.
Well, I wanted my kids, and I knew I wanted a big family, but I wanted my kids to be a team. And they spent a lot of time over the weekend joking about fights that they had and things that they did that I never knew anything about, which I think is true of all parents. But in general, they're a team. They used to refer to themselves as the Sib Squad when they were younger. And I wanted that for them because I always felt like my sisters and I, we were each 5 years apart. I'm 5 years older than my next sibling, and then almost 11 years older than my younger sibling. But I feel like it was very common among my mom's generation to kind of encourage competitiveness. And I'm a non-competitive person, so I don't thrive very well in that environment at all. And so I feel like we had to become adults before we really got to know each other, and kind of always felt like, well, we didn't get to be the Sib Squad that my kids got to be, and that their kids, I have noticed, are as well, my nieces and nephews. And so the three of us were sitting. It was an unseasonably wonderful Oklahoma evening, which we usually don't get in early August. And so we were all sitting out on my new back patio, and it was the three of us. And it's not the first time I felt that kinship between us, but it was just nice. Like there was no pretense or there was nothing going on under the surface. We were just the three of us sitting together, enjoying the new house, enjoying the new backyard, and I hope we get more of that.
I think you will. I really think you will. You've done so much. I mean, we've only worked together for 5 weeks. This is our fifth call, but leading into it, it manifestation and oh, you did this, Melissa, and you manifested this kind of sounds fake and phony, and the skeptic in me is like, well, there's no way. But also, you've been doing tiny little micro decisions for years to get you to this place. So the idea of, oh, Melissa manifested a perfect family experience, seems not true on the surface. But also, all of the teeny tiny things you've done to create this, worked. And that's got to be very gratifying.
It's funny. I was checking Facebook memories as I do, and I try to save my photos now because who knows, that could go away. And apparently 4 years ago I posted a meme, and it was some quote from someone else about, hey, my home's always open. There's always this in the refrigerator. There's always snacks in the pantry. And I had shared it, and above it, I had said, I'm working to make my home like this. I don't remember sharing it. I don't remember posting it. I didn't remember it at all. It was 4 years ago, but I'm reading through this and I'm like, hey, look at that.
Yeah. Welcoming, inviting, where you feel like you belong. Before we got on the call, since it's been 2 weeks since we spoke, I was refreshing my memory of what we talked about last time. And I gave you the homework assignment to try, if you could, to look at yourself in the mirror and say, there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me. How did that work out?
I mean, it is a surprisingly emotional thing to do. And I've been working on it, and doing that. And I don't know if this is a normal reaction or not, but I'm a little angry at a world to grow up in where you're 53 years old and you need to do that.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that.
Yeah. There's so much that has happened in those 53 years, and especially when you're a child and you're a sponge and you're looking for the adults in the room to acknowledge that you are okay and that there's nothing wrong with you. But many adults don't compliment or give the positive praise. It's just all of these corrections along the way. Stand up straight. Don't slouch. Do this. Don't that. Smile. Go hug so-and-so. Like, and it's just constant, like, in a way, berating of children to get them to conform and get in line. And I know that happened to you and unfortunately most of us. And I agree with you.
And I have a core of really close friends and they are great. And obviously I have my husband, my children, and my extended family. But it kind of made me think about the superficial company I keep outside that circle. I'm 53 years old. It shouldn't be hard to look in a mirror and say there's nothing wrong with me. And it made me kind of wonder, who am I surrounding myself with? I mean, work is great. It's not the coworkers, but who am I surrounding myself with that this is hard for me? And yeah. Maybe I should think about that a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You brought up Facebook and different stuff. Sometimes even just the subconscious scrolling ideas get put in your head. Oh, my foyer doesn't look like that. And oh, I don't have that hedge in the backyard. And oh, I don't have a Valentine's Day tree, even though maybe you never even wanted a Valentine's Day tree. But yeah, it's the idea that other people are doing life better. And that's probably not the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agree. I think you're doing great. Also, many people wish they had an 80s style arcade in their living room.
I'm pretty sure we will get teased for this. I'm also pretty sure I don't care. It was kind of funny because what you're not seeing because of where I'm sitting is to my left is a very traditional fireplace mantle with our most recent and not greatly recent family photo hanging. And then 8x10s of each of the 5 kids up there. Nice. And then on the other side of the arcade is just kind of a history of the family photos we've taken of each of the kids. There's one with my husband and I, and then one with the first, second, and then we dropped out of the pictures. And it goes down through when we brought, when our fifth baby was born and they took pictures of the 5 kids in the hospital. Aww. And I said to my daughter, I said, is it weird that I have these very traditional family scenes on 2 walls of the house and then a big arcade along the back wall? And she's like, well, no, because one fed into the other 2 for sure.
That is true. Yeah. So if you look at your family and these 5 kids and the dumpstering and then moving into this house together, would you say that it was kind of a healing exercise, or do you look around now and feel healed? Like there's the healing in that we're still in progress, or do you feel gratified? Like, okay, we're healed. How do you feel?
Well, I think because people change constantly, I think healing is always going to be a work in progress, not just for me, but for the adult kids. I wish it stayed in a single line and okay, now I'm better. But I've had enough therapy to know that's not how healing works. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll always be a cycle. I don't think we'll go to the low, low places as much as we did. And what was interesting is, again, these boxes of pictures that I had from my grandmother that I thought I knew the contents. It was interesting to kind of, as we were going through it and trying to be fast because we've got the air conditioning turned way up at the other house because we're still paying electric bills until we sell it. And so we're kind of steamy and we're kind of unhappy. And it's, you know, we like this house better. We don't want to be over there. But I'm showing these pictures to the kids and the stories that go behind these pictures. And I think, and you know, to me, they're just the things that happened. And sometimes I forget, if I know a thing and experienced a thing, it doesn't mean my children know and experience the same thing. So I'm telling them these family stories that they didn't know, like they're normal. And my kids are like, wow, mom, that's kind of crazy. That's kind of, you know, that's not okay. Or that's funny. And I think they saw a lot more just from, oh, quick, look at this picture. What shaped me? Because I know I definitely saw, oh, that's why I do that. That's why I think that. And most of it was very, very joyful. I mean, finding these old pictures. I've touched on it a little bit. I was very active as a teenager in the International Order of Rainbow for Girls. I was a rainbow girl. My fourth child, my 21-year-old, is the past Grand Worthy Advisor, past state president of Rainbow rather recently. And I was the mother advisor for our local group for 12 years. My great-grandmother always told me she was a rainbow girl. And Rainbow was founded in McAlester, Oklahoma, which she grew up in Colgate, Oklahoma, which is near-ish to McAlester. She told me that. We weren't super close growing up, but she told me that. And when she passed, I searched and searched her house as we cleaned it out and never found evidence of that. And it's not that I disbelieved her, but I knew if she had been, it had to have been fairly close to the founding of the organization, because it started in 1922 and my grandmother was born in 1927. So her membership had to have been on the early side of its founding and relatively short. And there's a book that we use to open and close our meetings and to hold initiations. And I found hers in the box.
Oh, wow.
And it was very emotional to sit there with my four daughters, three of whom are former members because they aged out, one of whom is the youngest, is currently active, and look at great grandma Bessie's old rainbow book, old rainbow ritual. And she had always told me, and I'd always believed her, but I just felt connected to her and to the girls.
Yeah.
In a way that we haven't before. And so it was, you know, and with that was her teenage year scrapbook with those little photo booth strips of her and her girlfriends, both in McAlester and in Oklahoma City, which tracks because that's at about the time they moved from one place to the other in my family. And it was very emotional. I didn't mean to go off on that tangent, but it was.
So I don't think it is a tangent, because you wrote, well, you're kind of beating yourself up a little bit in that you really want to write more and make progress on the book, but obviously you're moving and life happened and you had a birthday party and all this wonderful things. But it sounds like you're continuing to pull together this kind of family archive in all things that you do.
I'm nodding, and I know that doesn't translate well on a podcast, but and I was going to lead this morning with, this is probably the least organized I've been on my homework in all of our sessions, but I don't feel bad about it because I feel like I did a lot.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with you.
That too.
Yeah. So, the whole having to do something a certain way in order to feel proud or to feel like you can check it off the list. Can you start now to see that being adjacent to where you think you should be is good enough? Does that feel possible?
I mean, we're working on it. It's a work in progress. I really liked the book, and I'm going to get the title wrong. That is one of the fun things about my memory not being what it was, but it's basically How to Clean House While Drowning.
Yeah, that's a great book. Yeah.
It blew my mind just to read the sentence. And I remember sharing it on Facebook because it was that important to me, that, you know, the state of your house isn't, it's just an is. It's not a reflection of your moral character.
Yeah.
Because they sure didn't want us to think that in the 70s.
No. Okay. So growing up, did you have to like frantically clean and hide every time people came over?
Yes. And again, fairly sure since I'm neurodivergent, that was something that at a minimum my mother struggled with, and I think my father too would never suggest that to them. They would reject that out of hand. But my mother always struggled with the home organization, and I did too, raising kids in the house. It was just always a really big source of shame. We couldn't have people in the house. And then when we had no choice but to have people in the house, it was, 2 or 3 days of frantic cleaning. And I always felt that that reflected badly. And I mean, the kids in the neighborhood, that was the thing I got picked on for, was having a house nobody could go in. I'm sensitive about that. I was sensitive about.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a difference between clutter and everyday living and then like filth and knowing the difference between that. And also you're actively trying to create a home right now that is welcoming to all people that come in. So have you been able to bridge that? How do you feel right now? Like the state of your house, can someone pop in right now?
Oh, absolutely. And I say with love. Also, we just moved in and it's easy to maintain. Although I'm feeling good about it because, of course, we have boxes in the garage, but everything we want from the old house is here. We're not bringing anything else over. And what we've got in the garage, there are places for. Finding time in the schedule to get the things into the places is a little bit of a different story, but there are places for. It's not unmanageable.
Yeah, it's interesting because you really like history and things, and it at times feels like two competing things. Like you want to keep things and hold on to things because of nostalgia and because of the fact that you're in the midst of a writing project and you want your kids to know these stories, but also the desire to be somewhat more minimal than you used to be.
Well, I don't, and I remember this once as they got older and we all moved out, my parents were able to hire people to help them keep the home. And I remember moving back, after living abroad and needing a place to regroup and get some money together and go on with my adult life. I moved back home. And one of the house cleaners said, there's nothing wrong with your mom and dad. They just have too much stuff and not enough places to put it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of stuck with me through the years. I need to make sure that if I'm going to have stuff, I have places to put it.
Yeah.
Fortunately, photo collections, I mean, what I've got and have brought over from the old house isn't small, but it's manageable and I know what to do with it over time.
Yeah. Good. A bit ago, you said that the house and different aspects of it when you were growing up provoked thoughts and feelings of shame. And shame is just such a loaded word. And it definitely does kind of conjure up that thought of, well, there's something wrong with me and I need to hide this and I need to hide that. And people who are unashamed, we look at times like, wow, they must feel free. Because they are who they are, warts and all. So there's that aspect with your house. How other out little, 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 speak with words, Steph. In what other ways has shame sort of popped up that might make you feel as if you're doing something wrong?
I mean, it's funny that you bring that up as we went through this family photo collection, and I have mentioned this before, in earlier sessions and in talking about writing the book. I almost think it's generational for me. Some of the most awkward pictures in the collection that my daughters and I were going through are pictures of my mom and her adoptive parents, which and then her actual mom, who she thought was her much older cousin, and her two half brothers, And they're posing like it's this family picture. And to my mom and my uncles, they had no idea. And the rest of the family knows. And I just wonder what it was like. My daughters and I talked about this, looking at these photos, what it was like for the adults in that picture to go through knowing, like one of them, my grandmother had recently gotten married and my mom is in the picture with her adoptive parents, my grandmother's aunt and uncle, and she's still quite a young baby in the picture. And we were like, well, this is the most awkward picture ever.
Okay, just because they appeared to be too old to have a baby? Is that what you mean?
No, because everybody in that picture except my mom knew that my mom was actually my grandmother's daughter. And we're all pretending that this, you know, that everything's normal, that nothing like that ever could have happened in this family. And that is just so much not the worst thing in the world to ever happen in any family.
No, it's not. Okay. So just to recap, in case you're tuning in, can you explain the family dynamic quickly?
So my grandmother had my mother out of wedlock when she was 18 or 19. I honestly can't remember, but she was a legal adult. And that's important because she was sent to a home for unwed mothers to have my mom, but they couldn't compel her to give my mom up for adoption because she was a legal adult. And my grandmother desperately wanted to see my mom grow up. Mm-hmm. And so the fix was to have my grandmother's aunt and uncle, who were unable to have children of their own. And the uncle, he was only 8 years older than my grandmother. So it wasn't so much an age thing, but they adopted my mom. And the boundaries that were placed were that nobody could ever know that my mom was my grandmother's daughter. But in the meantime, my grandmother goes on to marry and have two boys. And my mom's adoptive mother wanted my mom to have a relationship with them, even if it was as second cousins, because she came from a big family herself and wanted my mom to experience siblings without ever knowing they were her siblings. So the family did things together all the time. And the dynamics on the adults in that room must have been so difficult.
Yeah.
Keeping all these secrets. And so I think we were born, my sisters and I feel like, knowing that there were things you just didn't talk about, even though at the time we were born, all of it was out in the open. And we always called my grandmother grandma and always awkwardly called my mom's adoptive father our grandfather. And he was her uncle, which you don't question as a kid. And then it was all explained to us as we got older. But there was always a sense of things that shouldn't be known are not talked about at this table in this house. And that was never one of the things that shouldn't be known, but the importance of hiding things was still very present on my mom's side of the family.
Yeah. Okay. So you were born into sort of this culture where you were in this like cloud of shame. And so as an adult, then you've been trying really hard to get away from that feeling and feeling like when there's something wrong with you, but to that you have to hide in the shadows and in the darkness, because of the shame. It's also interesting that you're talking about the posed picture and then earlier we had talked about Facebook. It also shows humans just in general are always a little bit performing for others. Like if this was just a family photo to capture the moment for themselves, and obviously it was before social media and before all of this stuff, it's not like you're broadcasting this photo to anyone, yet they still were in this performative state.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that, as you were talking and I was kind of reflecting a little bit, they were very big on celebrate the achievements. Celebrate the achievements, show off the good things, and keep that bad stuff quiet and, you know, under wraps. And I'm not a person that can do that. And I never have been, not even when I was a kid. If I was sad, I wanted to feel sad and not be told I should feel happy. And if something was wrong, I wanted to say, hey, that's wrong, and not just keep quiet about it. And so that was a huge struggle for me on that side of the family. Always wanting to call out the things that I didn't think were fair or right or, you know, good. and being told, no, we celebrate the good things. We don't push and talk about the bad things. We just ignore them till they go away, and then they don't go away.
No, they don't. And that's it. So, okay. So you have a very good nose for BS and for people faking it. Okay. Slow down society. Thank you so much for being here and for listening. That was a really detailed episode, and Melissa shared so much of her family history. And I'm certain that you really can tell how thoughtful she's being and how she's writing this book. And she wants to share these family stories, and she's not scared to shine light on them and to share them for generations to come so they can learn from the past in order to not make those same mistakes in the future. There are a few episodes that I want to drop in here. Episode 12 is called Taking Stock of the Here and Now. The beginning of this episode, I said you can download those worksheets. You can. StephanieO'Day.com/new-you, all one word. Episode 14, Motivation is a Choice. Sometimes we are waiting for someone to tell us to get started or waiting for something inside to give us permission, but motivation is a choice. So episode 14 talks about that. Episode 20 is a different coaching client of mine, Catherine. Real coaching, real clients, Catherine's story. And I just thought it might be interesting to hear a different voice, someone else sharing her befores and afters in her own words. And then episode 88, Reprogramming Internal Dialogue. Melissa shares that growing up, she had to keep secrets, and she had this kind of inner voice like, oh, can't share that. Oh, can't do that. And so episode 88, I talk about how to go about reprogramming that internal dialogue. All right, pretty people, as always, I think you're amazing and lovely and wonderful and kind. I'll be back in your earbuds next week. If you are ready to start living slowly and ditch the hustle mindset for good, reach out to me. I'm a real person, and you can track me down online at StephanieO'Day.com. Also, if you found value in this podcast, please share it with your family and friends and tag me on Instagram at StephanieO'Day. While you're at it, go ahead and leave a positive review on your favorite podcast app. The more we share, like, the more people we can reach and share the slow down lifestyle and messaging. Thank you, Slow Down Society, and have a great day.